There was a Norwegian politician before the Second World War whose name was Vidkun Abraham Lauritz Jonsson Quisling. Now, he wasn't famous because he had a really cool name. He was famous for a kind of a more negative reason. Because what he did was, he sold his country out to the Germans. And he made it possible for the Germans to come in and invade his country, Norway. And as he went forward in that work, and as he was collaborating with the enemy, something weird happened. His name got taken to become the name for a lot of people who collaborated with the enemy. So anybody who was working with the Germans in occupied Europe started being called a Quisling. They started calling them Quislings. And after the Second World War, what happened was that they rounded up these people who collaborated, and not only them, but the women who'd been with German men and had children with German men were also rounded up. And what was happening, the women had their heads shaved and they were stripped. And the collaborators were shot. And every time I see this film of these things happening, even as a small child, as I saw those films, the question seemed odd to me. As I saw them mistreating the women, as I saw them shooting these people, it always occurred to me, wasn't that what they were fighting Hitler to stop? Wasn't that kind of brutality what they were fighting Hitler to get rid of? And as people try to deal with the feelings of hurt, it can destroy them. And they can become monsters. And they can start responding to people who have hurt them in a way which is horrible, in a way which is vile. That's what we have here. We're looking at the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount is a set of teachings from Jesus. But if you think the Sermon on the Mount, let's go to the next slide. I can't stand to see those images. The Sermon on the Mount is Jesus talking to a crowd of people. It's on a mount. It's a mountain, okay? And he's there and he's got his disciples in front of them and he's speaking to those people. But around him are groups of other people. And the other people have all kinds of issues. On one side you have these religious leaders. And they're really just together religiously. And they tithe all their money and they wash all the time and they wear the right clothes and they're really, really what you regard as being someone who's really, really religious. And on the other side you had the tax collectors, the Quislings. And they worked for the Romans and they were making a lot of money ripping off their own people for the Romans. And with them were the women who had gone with Roman soldiers. The women who had married or were living with Roman soldiers and having children with them. And these groups were outcasts. And what they did was they joined together. And they just stayed there on the side and they didn't mix with the nice people. Now what happens is Jesus is talking to his disciples. And he says something very interesting to them. He says, listen guys, you're going to be more holy than the religious people. You're going to be more righteous than those people who are religious. Because your goodness is going to go way beyond theirs. In this whole passage, he is showing us two things. He's showing us that people, when people want to do something religious, they do something. But what he says is that when people come to me, they are somebody. He's saying people do something religious, but I don't want you to be doing something religious. I want you to become a certain way. He finishes chapter 5 by saying, be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. The plan is not that you just stop doing bad things. The plan is that you start to look like the Father in heaven. You start to look like God. Is that possible? Is that possible? Is it possible for you and I to respond to the world the way that God responds to the world? Seems crazy, doesn't it? Seems crazy. It's easy when things are going well. It's easy when we're with nice people. It's easy when the people are nice to us. It's easy to respond the way God responds then. But isn't it hard when people are horrible to us? Isn't it hard when people are nasty to us? Isn't it hard when people make us feel horrible? Can we still respond to those people the way God responds to the world? We saw last week that yes, we respond nice to the people who are nice to us. But the temptation when people hurt us is to just go and crush them, destroy them, waste them, wipe them away. And the religious people in Jesus' time were like that. Jesus quotes them. He says, you've heard it say, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. And the thinking goes like this. If someone hates me, or if they're my enemy, they must be a bad person, because of course there's nothing wrong with me. And if someone hates me, then they're a bad person. And because they're a bad person, they need to be hated. And those people come to Jesus and say, look at those quislings, those tax collectors. Look at those prostitutes. They're bad people. They're doing a bad thing. They're betraying us. And they need to be hated. They need to be put down. They need to be pushed out of society. And the religious people had this reasoning that it wasn't from the Bible. They'd added to it. And what they said was, God hates sin. So that person, because they're identified by their sin, well, God must hate them. And because God hates them, I'd better hate them too. And I'd better wipe them out. And I'd better loathe them. The Dead Sea Scrolls were put together by a group of people called the Essenes. And they lived in the Dead Sea area, obviously. And the Essenes were a monastic group. They had a monastery there. And every morning, those guys got up twice a day, morning and afternoon. And they prayed a prayer. And the prayer was this. Oh God, I promise to hate forever the unjust and to fight together with the just. And they made a promise to themselves and God every day, twice a day, to hate the unjust and to fight with the just. And the way they may feel good about themselves was to demonize other people. Put them in a box. Isn't that what we do all the time? Isn't that how we make them feel good about ourselves? By saying, I'm better than that person, that person's bad, I'm good, and so I feel okay because I'm not them. People do it all the time. People who go to university look down on people who didn't go to university. People have one shade of skin color, look down on someone who's got a different shade of skin color. People have one regional accent, look down on someone with another regional accent. People have one job, look down on the person with another job. It's natural, it's what people do all the time. Because their inner sense of self gets determined by their hatred of other people. Let me give you an example. It's kind of a goofy one. 1968, the film Planet of the Apes. Planet of the Apes is a really cool film. They made a remake, but it's nowhere near as good. The original was fantastic. And in Planet of the Apes, they had people obviously in ape costumes. And they had three types of apes. They had chimpanzees, orangutans, and gorillas. And people put on these costumes at the beginning of the day and they play the parts all day long. But the funny thing about Planet of the Apes was this. When they stopped for lunch, do you know what started to happen? The chimpanzees ate with all the other chimpanzees. The gorillas ate with all the other gorillas. And the orangutans ate with all the other orangutans. Isn't that bizarre? They're wearing a costume. And they start eating together with the other people who are wearing the same costume. Now, if that can happen in that kind of situation, how much more can that happen in a world where we are with so much diversity? And Jesus says something to these people. He says, he accuses them of becoming what they say their enemies do. He says, are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your brothers, what are you doing more than those? Do not even the pagans do that? Okay, if you forget everything else, just try to remember this. If you think you're good, and then you hate the people you think are bad, you become bad. If you think you're good, and you hate the people that you think are bad, you become bad. Like the people who took those women and shaved their head in the Second World War, and they said, oh, we're fighting the Nazis. You know what? They became like the Nazis. They became just the same. And when we get together with people who are like us, and we laugh at people outside of our group, then we become bad. When we take a person and we say, well, they did a bad thing, so they must be a bad person, and we hate them because of it, we become bad. And yet that's the only way we seem to know how to create a community. You get an association of people and they join together, and they're going to say, we're going to fight racism and we're going to fight inequality. So what's the first thing they do? They hate the racist and they hate the rich. They find unity. They find themselves together by defining who they're not and then hating who they're not. Emil Durkheim said, hey, that's our religion works. Emil Durkheim said that's the whole thing about religion. You have a religion, you have a group of the church, and you get together and you all love each other, and then you know that you're secure by hating the people who are outside. He said, in a world, in a heaven full of blue-eyed angels, the brown-eyed angels cast out. He said, religious groups become tribal. They become this group of people who get together and they just love each other intensely. And everyone says, this is really great. But they love each other because they're not others. Because they hate people outside. And you might be here this morning and you're sitting there and you're looking around and you're saying, yeah, okay, it's nice that all these people love each other. But how are they going to feel about the atheist? How are they going to feel about someone who's living an openly gay lifestyle? How are they going to respond to them? What will the response be to them? Okay. This is what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying, I'm going to build a kingdom, a hidden community. And for thousands of years, people will come into that kingdom, that family. And when they come into the family of the kingdom, a change will happen in their hearts. They will be sorry for their sin. They will hunger and thirst to know Jesus. They'll want to be a peacemaker. They'll bring salt and light. And the change will happen not just when things are going fine, but the change will happen when things are not going fine, when things are going badly. He says, if you love those who love you, what reward will you get? There's no merit in loving those who love you. People say, oh, I'm a good person. I love my mom and dad. I love my friends. I'm a good person. Everybody loves their mom and dad. Everybody loves their friends. Nothing special about that. Jesus says, when you come into my kingdom, something amazing will happen. And you will start to look like the Father in heaven. He says, I tell you, verse 44, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. The word love there is a future imperative. As an English teacher, I know that. He's really saying, you will love your enemies. You will love your enemies. Doesn't mean you go all gooey when you think about them. But it means that you respond to people who hurt you with care and patience and calmness and respect. What do we do when someone hurts us? Well, in many countries, if someone hurts you, they go get a gun and they shoot you. That deals with the problem. You British are just so much better at this. You British are really good at this. I've learned the hard way. If someone hurts you in the UK, what you do is, it's all very clever. You don't say anything to them, and you ignore them, and you kind of start to cut them out, and you don't invite them to things, and you don't speak to them. There's a little town called Coventry where you send them, and you don't give them invitations, and you know when you've offended somebody because they don't look you in the eye, and they don't address you. But what do you do when you love somebody, when you care about somebody? You look them in the eye, and you talk to them. You demonstrate that they're important to you. You connect with them. You don't demonize them or write them off or ignore them or categorize them or kind of wish that they would stop being there or associate them with their failings. Jesus says this, you're going to offer the same kind of response to people who hate you as you do to everybody else. You're going to offer the same kind of love and care to people who hate you as you do to everybody else. You're going to keep engaging with them. And whilst you engage with somebody, it's hard. You have to take their behavior, the hurtful behavior, you have to separate from them. You have to say, your behavior's over there, and you're over here, and I want to respond to you and love you, and I want us to talk about what you did. And it's a lot harder than just ignoring somebody. To go to somebody and say, listen, I love you and I care about you, but what you did hurt me, and I want to talk about it. And they might still be mean to you, but what Jesus says, if they're still mean to you, just pray for them. Just pray for them. Pray that God will change their heart. And this is the magic difference between being in God's family and being in God's kingdom and just being religious. Because when you're face to face with someone who's selfish and mean and persecutes you, the message that you give them is to continue to love them and care for them and be interested in them and speak to them and look them in the eyes and say, you're important. This is one of the ways you know you're changed. You become like God. What does God do? Verse 44, 45. that ye may be sons of the Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. This is amazing. God offers unconditional love and care and provision for everybody. Not just the people who love him, but the people who hate him. God takes care of everybody. That's how God is. People who hate him, rebel against him, and refuse to talk to him, and shake their fist at him, and ignore him, they still have a job. They still have a house. Sun still shines on them. People think if you do something bad, a rain cloud will come over you and start hitting you with thunderbolts. Maybe it's a little bit too much Looney Tunes. And if you do something bad, then you'll walk along with this big cloud over your head. And if you do something really good, then the sun will shine on you and you'll have a really good day. I've tried it. Doesn't work. The weird thing is that if you do something bad or you do something good, if you're a bad person, a good person, God just kind of takes care of you anyway. He just kind of takes care of you anyway. He provides for you anyway. He gives you home and food and family and friends and all those things to people who love him and to people who hate him. Now that doesn't mean that there's no difference between loving God and hating God. Of course there is. There are consequences to loving God. If you love God and you respect him and you come to him and you honor him and you want to communicate with him, or if you come to God and you say, you're my enemy, or if you just ignore him or refuse to listen to him or don't respect him or try to cut him out of your life, he'll still take care of you. You'll have a huge space of time in your life when you can choose to love him and to serve him, or you can choose to hate him and rebel against him. But as the days become weeks, and the weeks become months, and the months become years, what you find is that the ongoing consequences of people who've rejected God start to become self-evident. And the ongoing consequences of people who've loved him become evident. There is punishment for people who ignore God. But I believe the punishment is largely self-inflicted. People who hate God and reject him and ignore him, they face suffering. But the suffering, I think, is largely self-inflicted. God doesn't hit people with a thunderbolt who reject him. He keeps providing for them. He keeps taking care of them. He keeps calling them. It's us who push him away. It's us who say, I don't want you. The ultimate sin is not murder. The ultimate sin is rejecting God, telling him to stay out of your life. The ultimate punishment God is giving us is to give us what we ask for. Leave us alone. The ultimate horror is coming to the end of your life and finding out that God gives you what you've asked for. An eternity without him, where he gives you what you voted for. God doesn't beat people up or try to crush them. He's calling out to them. Dave read Romans 5. You see it just at the right time. While we're still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous man, though for a good person someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we are still sinners, Christ died for us. While we were at God's enemies, we were reconciled to him through the death of his son. While we were God's enemies, he sent his son to die for us. Isn't that amazing? I might give my life for you on a good day. I don't know if we're on a cliff somewhere and you're falling down. I might reach down and put my life in peril for you. I might. Not for you, Magnus, but most for most people. I might give my life for you. But you know what? I would never give my child's life for you. I would never give my son's life for you. Never give my daughter's life for you. But what God did was for his enemies, he gave his own son's life for his enemies. And he's come back to life now. He's saying, I want to forgive you. You've rejected me, but I'm holding out my hands to you. And people who grab hold of his hands become like the Father in heaven. They become sons of the Father in heaven. They become complete the way he's complete. So let's go back to our initial question. Is it possible for people to respond to bad situations the way God does? The answer is yes. Because when you reach out your hand and you receive Jesus in your life, and when he takes over your life, what happens is you start to be determined not by where you come from, but by where you're going. Your life starts to be determined by where you're going. And you're no longer someone who's an enemy of God, but you're at peace with him. And when you have peace with God, then you really have peace. You have peace in the center of your being. You have the confidence that comes from knowing that God loves you. And he fills you up with love. And you feel confident. And you feel unconditionally happy. And you don't know why you're happy, you just feel happy. And to the extent that you know the love of God for you, to the extent that you comprehend how much God loves you, your heart becomes immune to what anybody else can do. To the extent that you understand how much God loves you, your heart becomes immune to the hurt of other people. If you have the love and the care of the Creator and the Sustainer of the universe, if the Creator and Sustainer of the universe loves you personally, what do you care about what that person says to you? What do you care about what they do to you? How can that hurt you? When things are going bad, even when people hate you, you know God's at work. And knowing how much He loves you, you can respond with that same love to people hurting you. And you can separate them from what they're doing and say, I love you, but I hate what you did. And it means you're secure. So that when people hurt you, you don't have to respond with anger and malice, but you can keep looking them in the eye and keep engaging with them. Because they can't hurt the real you. Because the real you is safe. You're sitting here this morning, maybe, and you feel like an outsider. I understand that. I was born in Germany, I grew up in England, an American. Lived in Italy for 10 years. I know what it's like to be an outsider. Just about everywhere I go, I'm an outsider. And the singing feels strange and you feel exposed. And you never really thought much about Jesus or about, haven't really cared about God had to say about your life. If you think about it, in real terms, you've been his enemy. You've been kind of running away from him and refusing to respond to him. But the love of God is here for you this morning. He just loves you so much. And his desire is to pull you into that love and to forgive you and to become the center of your heart. We're going to have a moment of silence. And in that moment of silence, I want to ask you to do something. I want to ask you to close your eyes and in your mind, have a chat with God. Close your eyes and in your mind, have a chat with God. And can I suggest you say this to him? Say, I'm sorry for the way I've rejected you. And I want you to love me. And I want to love you back. And I want to be your friend. And I want to fill you with yourself. Can you throw in the towel today? Can you do that right now? Let's just come for a moment of silence. And while we're in silence, please just pray in your heart to God.